not running, but I'm going to keep working and speaking and standing up for what I believe. I want to be sure that people understand I'm going to keep speaking out. I'm not going anywhere. What's at stake in our country, the kinds of things that are happening right now, are deeply troubling to me.
For the 7,000th time, ladies and gentlemen, Hillary Clinton will not be running for president this year. 2016 was obviously a bruising campaign, and most of us feel like we've never got to be done with 2016 because there's an investigation going on right now about the Russians getting involved in that campaign. And of course, the wounds are still fresh from the Bernie and Hillary battles. But look, with her not running for president this year and plenty of dynamite, dynamic, qualified Democrats running for the nomination, perhaps the old wounds of the Hillary and Bernie wars, maybe that's all done. Let's just move forward with one of these fabulous, fantastic candidates that we have. Welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin, episode number 288, and I want to thank you so much for being here.
There's also some new reporting today that old grievances between the Clinton and Sanders worlds are bubbling up again. Politico reporting that the former Clinton camp is stewing over Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign and is pointing to what they see as Sanders' flaws and vulnerabilities.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Nobody can snatch defeat from the jaws of victory like the United States Democratic Party. So, the headline: former Hillary Clinton aides really want Bernie Sanders to get the Clinton treatment. The anti-Bernie Sanders campaign being pushed by former Clinton staffers explained. In the past week, a number of Clinton staffers, quoting here, have gone to the press both publicly and anonymously to air their frustrations about the Vermont senator who launched his 2020 presidential bid. At the core of their frustrations is the belief that Clinton beat Sanders fair and square and that Sanders was a sore loser. Let me remind everybody what happened. So when Bernie decided that he was going to run for president in 2016, and I remember because he was appearing regularly on the Tom Hartman show, and he kept saying, I'm watching the folks that are getting into the race, the Democratic bid for president. I'm watching, and if nobody sufficiently, and I'm paraphrasing here, not quoting, nobody sufficiently progressive gets in, he says, then he will get in. And of course, when Hillary got in and she went right to the freaking top, he goes, all right, now I'm in. So a lot of the Hillary people, and by the way, they say for the Bernie people, those are the Bernie bros, right? Those are the people that, I don't know, push around the Hillary people. I don't know. I think the Bernie Bros is almost a made-up thing. There's a progressive talk show host here in town, who Carl Wolfson, who had a show on the air. Of course, we lost KPOJ, but then he was working at another thin air station, if I'm not mistaken. And then I remember very, very vividly hearing that he quit his job on the radio. What the hell? And I go, man, is there just no place for progressive radio anymore? And then I read the article. He goes, I just can't handle the Bernie bros. Here's the thing. If you can't handle the criticisms that are going to come with being in talk radio, and by the way, the Bernie bros are really the least of your problems. We have a lot of white supremacists in this country, and if you decide to take up space in front of a mic, as I am doing now, you will get threats. You will get threats to your safety, and sometimes you will get threats to your life. That is just what comes along with it. But this guy, Carl Wolfson, says, oh, I can't handle the Bernie bros, so I'm quitting the radio. It got bad. It got real bad. So bad that this host felt like he had to quit. The real problem is that Bernie Sanders came so close to beating Hillary Clinton. The fact that the superdelegates got to vote on the first ballot did a really sufficient job of suppressing turnout. But even with that, Bernie Sanders almost beat her. And then when it was pretty clear that he didn't have a clear path to the nomination, not only did he drop out of the race, but he turned right around and he endorsed her. You know, like a sore loser. Of all the qualities that people seem to be turned on by, I suppose, with the Democrats that are running for the nomination, the number one thing that I'm hearing from folks, we want a guy or gal that can beat Donald Trump. It sounds strange to say, but really anybody can beat him. And that's not a good quality in a president, because once he beats Donald Trump, then what? If you want that on your list, fine, but move it towards the bottom of the list and put another reason at the top, like they're sufficiently progressive. I'm hoping that with time, the Hillary people will just get over themselves. Now, once Bernie dropped out of the race back in 2016, I didn't do a full-throated endorsement of her, but I said she is going to get my vote. And I can't even tell you the kind of hell that I caught for saying that. You would have thunk that I said, I'm endorsing Donald Trump, because that's the kind of hatred that I got, you know? Or I'm endorsing, who's that child molester from Alabama? Roy Moore. I got mad hate for saying that. But I just didn't want this, I didn't want him to become president. And so because of the infighting, because of the influence on the election, you know, there's any number of reasons why 2016 turned out so badly. Let's not do that again. Or my hope is that it's a really, really small group of the Hillary Clinton people. And these headlines, and this is just one headline, these kind of headlines are only coming out covering this really small group of people. My hope is that overwhelmingly, most folks aren't bitter and cold like this. Yeah, I don't care for the way that 2016 turned out, but I don't hate the Hillary people, and I don't believe in the Bernie bros. And the reason that we are having the kind of conversation that we are having now, okay, for the Democrats, the process by which they pick their nominee, it's far more Democratic than it was way back then. And the conversation that's happening now is all because of the Bernie Sanders run in 2016. Tuition-free college, you know, a minimum standard income for everybody, universal health care, these kinds of things are happening because he got in the race. And he's back in the race again. And I don't necessarily think, see, the rule, kind of the unwritten rule, the way these things tend to go is, whoever got second place last time will get first place this time. Well, in 2000, McCain got second place. George W. Bush got the nomination. Then McCain ended up with the nomination in 2008. Mitt Romney ended up in second place in 2008. Then he got the nomination in 2012. It's just, so if past is prologue, it was fair to say Bernie gets the nomination this time because he was number two last time. But it's a whole different ballgame we're playing now. And if he becomes the nominee, I think he'll be great. I think he'll be a fabulous president. But if he does not, I think part of the reason that he's in this race is to make sure that the conversation that he started does not stop. All right. So this is how we pick our nominees. We pick good people. We pick progressives. We don't pick pedophiles. We don't pick rapists. We don't pick racists. We don't pick religious bigots. We don't pick gun nuts. Okay, this is how we pick our nominees. Sufficiently progressive people that are going to do something good for everybody. But there are some very, very loud voices right now that are telling us, easy there. Easy, Democrats. Don't pick somebody that's, too progressive. You know what I mean?
So I don't think that there is any urgency for him to, you know, immediately come out in favor of free college tuition for 4 years or Medicare for all. Those are certainly debates that are going to happen. But I think Biden can easily paint himself as a more centrist candidate.
Sanders, by the way, in Iowa today. Aaron, you're asking this question today. Are Democrats risking a Rust Belt loss in 2020 by going too far left?
Yeah, I think
does Biden help if he gets in the race with that?
Yeah, I think he certainly could.
His eyebrows are telling a whole different story, gang.
So this is the kind of ha-ha conversation that's happening around the table on Fox and MSNBC and CNN. And they're going, hey, if the Democrats move too far to the left, they're going to lose. And you can hear any number of conservatives talking about this, too. They'll go, hey, hey, Democrats, don't you move too far to the left because you're got okay. Let's talk about this. To the Republicans that are telling the Democrats that they shouldn't pick somebody that's too far to the left, let me just say, I appreciate your concern. Republicans, I'm talking to you now. I appreciate your concern that we might pick somebody who's too far to the left and that we might lose the election because we picked somebody that's too far to the left. I hear you. And I'm so glad that you, the Republicans, are giving us this advice because you would like to make sure that we win in the 2020 election. WTF. Why am I going to take your advice, GOP? Do you really think that I think that you want the Democrats to win in 2020? And that you're just talking about these centrist Democrats out of a concern for whether or not the Democrats win the election. I appreciate the advice, not really, to the media outlets with their centrist Democrat BS. I'm looking at you now. Donald Trump is a straight up white supremacist. You don't get much further to the right on the political spectrum. And so you're telling me that if we don't pick a corporate Democrat or a Nazi like the president, you too are concerned that we're not going to win after you guys gave this guy $2 billion in free media in 2016 to help ensure that he became president. To the GOP, with all due respect, to cable news, with all due respect, let me just say these words to you. Go piss up a rope.
For those people who are in that age bracket, the millennial age bracket, there's such a difference in the memories and perceptions of what socialism means. You know, is the Democratic Party really grappling with that? I mean, it seems to me like most millennials and, you know, people that I know, you say socialism, they think Sweden and Denmark, and that sounds pretty nice. It's a democracy with, you know, additional benefits where they have, you know, you have a more comfortable life. They don't think about Venezuela or, you know, the Nazis or all of the, you know, terrible things that happened previously in the century.
The Nazis. Venezuela and the Nazis. So here's another false choice that in recent weeks we have had put before us. Do you want capitalism or do you want socialism? And by socialism, I mean Nazism. Okay, this is a real conversation that's happening right now. First of all, this is a false choice. You don't say capitalism or socialism. Let me remind you, the United States military, 100% socialized. Our roads, bridges, police, fire, I've said this, completely socialized. But you know what exists right next to it? Capitalism. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're happening together. See, and if somebody says, you know what, we don't think these private for-profit insurance companies that kill 45,000 people a year in the pursuit of profit, we don't think that they should be in charge of our healthcare anymore because they're killing a lot of folks. That doesn't mean that we're making the choice between Nazi socialism and beautiful capitalism. It's first of all, you're talking to us like we're stupid. And a very, very big majority of us are. A lot of people are taking that and going, wow. The choice. Someday we'll look back and we'll say, in 2019, in 2020, were you on team socialism, Nazism, or were you on team capitalism? We can have capitalism. It needs to be regulated. They can pursue their profits. That's fine. But they also need to consider the damage that they do not only to their customers, but also to the environment. And the economy. These are simple things. Your roads, your bridges, your police, your fire, those things can remain socialized. And when you have full socialism, and by the way, I'll say this every week to the day I die, nobody, and I mean nobody, is calling for full socialism. Full socialism would also privatize the means of production. And I'm not certain if anybody's noticed, but the government is not involved in production right now.
Under the guise of Medicare for all and a Green New Deal, Democrats are embracing the same tired economic theories that have impoverished nations and stifled the liberties of millions over the past century. That system is socialism.
Oh, God, here we go. Okay, so that's Pence, the guy who loves Jesus, loves Jesus, that long-haired hippie socialist, but then gets on the stage and goes, oh, my God, socialism. So this isn't a new tactic, and these a-holes are not following a new script. There's a fabulous long-form article over at Think Progress by Ian Millhiser. The headline, A Brief 90-Year History of Republicans Calling Democrats Socialists. The thing about America is we appear to have a very severe lack of dictionaries and, of course, civics. And so people hear socialism and they hear boogeyman, but nobody, let me remind you, nobody is calling for socialism. So a couple of things that Ian Millhiser points out in this article is a few examples. The American Liberty League, you may or may not remember that, but the American Liberty League was a whole group of really hard right Republicans that were fighting against the New Deal. Quoting here, much of the league's rhetoric followed a narrow interpretation of the Constitution, an interpretation that conservative justice used for several decades to strike down progressive legislation ranging from the minimum wage child laws, and it held its limited understanding of the Constitution up as a shield against Roosevelt's supposed socialism. Laws such as Social Security, which, by the way, everybody loves, and the National Labor Relations Act, which protects workers' rights to unionize, all fit into a scheme under which economic planning is carried out. According to a pamphlet distributed by the League, only the Constitution stands in the way of complete government control of industry, agriculture, workers, and farmers. Only the Constitution stands in the way of a government takeover, the Constitution of our government. Operation Coffee Cup. This was a fun one. So, during the 50s and 60s, future President Ronald Reagan decided to record an LP, like a piece of vinyl. And it was because they said, watch out for socialized medicine, right? And it was actually put out by the AMA. And the reason was because the presidents, through my lifetime, through my mother's lifetime, through my grandmother's lifetime, and her mother's lifetime, we have been trying to find a way to get affordable health care to everybody. The word the conservatives use right now is access. They say, oh, you have access. It's true. If you get hit by a car, they have to take you to the hospital. They got to take care of you. They got to stabilize you. But that doesn't mean that you can afford it. That doesn't mean that you're not going to go broke and starve to death, because you're going to get hammered with all these hospital bills. The bills are now starting to roll in for when I had my hospital stay a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I was in there for about 7-8 hours, and they ran a bunch of tests. They found absolutely nothing. And by the way, I've got insurance, and these bills are rolling in, and they're, you know, my out-of-pockets hit $1,000. And for what? Huh? I've got insurance. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Insurance isn't there to help you. Insurance is there to help the insurance companies. And if you end up getting any help from your insurance, that's completely unintentional. So Ronald Reagan records this very famous record, both sides of the LP, talking about the dangers of socialism if we have universal health care or Medicare for all. So hopefully the Democrats, don't buy into this crap. Because, unfortunately, the media, the president and the vice president are.
Socialism is not about the environment. It's not about justice. It's not about virtue. Socialism is about only one thing. It's called power for the ruling class.
So, power for the ruling class. So, we just did our taxes, and it appears that our taxes went up because of the tax law that was passed by this president and this Republican Party. A lot of folks are learning right now that more power for the ruling class is exactly what they did when they decided to turn the keys over to this guy.
You know, and I think this whole titling issue of socialism, democratic socialism, it's getting a little lost. I mean, I think if you spoke to most young people, they're not saying, I am very much for the government controlling the means of production in our nation under a true socialism kibbutz-like atmosphere. That's not what it is. They're equating Medicare for all. They're equating health care for all. They're equating family leave. That's not socialism. I can't stand every time we get tongue-tied. And are you for? I mean, there are candidates who can't even answer now. Are you for capitalism?
Well, right.
And they're capitalists. Right. I mean, that's how they got their job.
Right, of all people, yes.
Have you heard of the For the People Act? You may remember that the very first bill that was drawn up by the Republicans, and I remember somebody said to me years ago, don't tell me what your values are. Show me your budget, and I will tell you what your values are. And the very, very first thing that all the Republicans got behind and fought tooth and nail, their very first bill, was the TCJA, which is a massive, massive cut, tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. That was their first act. For the Democrats, their HR 1 is the For the People Act. And by the way, I'm going to give you some points about it right now. You can Google it, but if you Google the For the People Act, probably because of Google bombing, you have to scroll way down the list to find an accurate story about the For the People Act. Because I noticed when I was Googling this, the first, say, 8 or 9 stories that came up were all from right-wing websites, you know, Fox News and Newsmax and all these sites that go, it's unconstitutional, it's socialism. There it is, socialism again. But the For the People Act is pretty simple. And by the way, everybody, and I mean everybody, regardless of party, should be able to get behind this thing.
House Democrats passed their legislative centerpiece, making good on their midterm campaign promise to clean up Washington Friday. At 700 pages, the For the People Act includes proposals making Election Day a federal holiday, automatically registering citizens to vote, and restoring voting rights to those who have served felony sentences. Among other things, the legislation would also require presidential candidates to disclose their tax returns.
It's 571 pages long, and so I'm not going to read the whole damn thing to you, but I do want to give you some bullet points. First, we'll start with voting and election laws. Voter registration to be made easier. Citizens can register online or get registered automatically via their driver's licenses or other government offices. For federal elections, states would have to provide same-day registration and at least 15 days of early voting. Election Day would become a federal holiday. That means you get the day off, paid, and you get to go vote. The bill would crack down on efforts to take voters off the voting rolls or prevent them from casting ballots. Felons could regain their voting rights after finishing their sentences. Federal elections would require paper ballots to prevent computer tampering. State chief election officials couldn't get involved in federal campaign. The bill would declare an intent to revive core anti-discrimination provisions of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 on campaign finance. Provisions of the Disclosure Act would expand the prohibition on foreign political money and mandate the disclosure of big donors. So if you're a big donor, you're giving millions of dollars to the Republican Party, you don't get to be anonymous anymore. I don't know if anybody knows, Skull Candy is run by one of these hardcore right-wingers, and he wants everyone, of course, to buy his headphones. This is Skull Candy. But then he doesn't want people to know that he's giving money to neo-Nazis. He would have to do so now. He would have to disclose that. Digital companies like Facebook and Google would have to set up public databases, cataloging political ad purchase requests of $500 or more, and create new measures to block ad buys by foreign nationals. No more Russia buying ads on Facebook. pretty common sense things. Presidential inaugural committees would have to disclose expenditures in addition to the existing requirement for donor disclosure. This is a response to reports of unexplained spending by Trump's inaugural committee. So Trump's inauguration took in over $100 million. And they, it's really fishy because we don't know where the money came from and we don't know where the money went. It looks like his inaugural committee began the filling of the swamp and that he just took a whole lot of bribes. And so now they got to account for all that money. A new matching fund program would support House candidates who agreed to raise only small dollar contributions, only small dollar contributions. The bill would quash sidecar super PACs that support individual candidates. Ethics. President and vice president would have to release their tax returns. Have to. Presidents-elect would need ethics plans for their transition teams and would have to file financial disclosures within 30 days of taking office. The bill would tell presidents and vice presidents that they should act as if they're covered by the conflict of interest law. This is, all right, anything bad here? Anything Nazi-ish so far? Okay. House members would be barred from serving on corporate boards. Easy, easy. House members would be forbidden to use taxpayer money to pay penalties for employment discrimination. This is because former Representative Blake Fahrenthold, Republican from Texas, used $84,000 in federal funds to settle a sexual harassment claim by a former staffer. No longer do you get to do that. The Supreme Court would have to get a code of ethics, something it has never, ever had. The laws regulating foreign and domestic lobbying would be explained. Anything in there sound bad? Nah? It's pretty good stuff, right? Yeah, the For the People Act. So, how's it being covered over in right-wing media? It's unconstitutional! They're coming for your freedom! They're coming for your freedom. They want you to vote. They want transparency. You know, they want people to get what they want out of their representatives and not just the millionaires and billionaires. It's socialism. There it is. Socialism again.
I have taken advantage of the banks probably more than any human being on earth. I love banks.
You believe in raising taxes on the wealthy?
I do, including myself.
Like so many promises when he was running for president, he said one thing and then, of course, he ended up doing a whole nother. But the American people tend to agree with candidate Trump. Way back when he said that everyone should be paying more taxes, up to and including himself. And then when he got elected, the first thing he did was cut his own taxes and the taxes of all of the rich white people that he knows. That's not what people want. But Melvin, they voted for the Republicans. They voted for the Republican president, so on, so forth, la, 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 la. They did. And I'm pretty sure they regret it now that they're doing their own taxes. But what people really want, and there's evidence of this. What people really, really want, both Republicans and Democrats, is for us to start taxing the rich.
But has public support for taxing the wealthy, has it changed in a measurable way since, let's say, 8 years ago in the Occupy Wall Street movement?
Sure. Survey taken around 2011 with a similar question, should we raise taxes on the wealthy? Support was about 50%. A similar survey that was recently taken, that number has risen to about 75%.
And that's Democrats and Republicans?
This is national. So okay. This is across the board. The majority of Americans think we should increase taxes on the wealthy, and that includes even some of the wealthy themselves.
The headline over at Roll Call, H.R. 1, the name of this bill, debate gets underway as GOP sharpens attacks. McConnell predicts electoral disaster for supporters but will not allow a vote. Meaning, hey, your H.R. 1, this bill will be a disaster. Fine, if it's going to be a disaster, why don't you let us shoot ourselves in the foot, McConnell? No. I'm not going to allow a vote. This from Politico, McConnell won't allow vote on election reform bill. Quoting here, Republicans ripped into the House Democrats electoral reform bill at a news conference, arguing that the legislation is merely a tactic to tilt elections in favor of Democrats. What? Hold up. So what you're saying is if we have fair and transparent elections, Democrats get elected, and that's what you don't like. McConnell, who dubbed the bill the Democrat Politician Protection Act because more people are allowed to vote, said that the bill is offensive to average voters. Peep this, kids. He does not care what you think. He's got this line.
For the American people. We're going to do this for the American people. For the American people.
He says this all the time with his little turtle jowls.
For the American people.
And he never, ever, ever, ever brings a bill to the floor that the American people want. There's a thing with super wealthy people, and that is that they believe that they get to live by completely different rules. And thanks to their access and their opulence, they really do. And the Democrats are being painted as radicals right now. How dare they do something so radical? The kind of policy discussions that are happening right now, I've not heard in my life in this country. And I never thought that I would hear them. And I would just like to say, I'm not a radical. My neighbor that wants the same thing is not a radical. My conservative neighbor that wants the next thing, that wants the same thing, is not a radical.
Well, the battle for the 2020 Democratic presidential campaign isn't just about who will get to take on President Trump next year and debate topics like this. It's also what the Democratic Party stands for. And we've got a hint, or we may have a hint, of where things are going. A CNN Des Moines Register MediaCom poll of likely Iowa caucus goers found that they are more likely to support candidates who favor new taxes on the wealthy, the Green New Deal, Medicare for all, the legislation of marijuana, and free tuition at public four-year colleges. I want to go into this a little deeper. Dutch journalist and historian Rutger Bregman seized on that, tweeting on Sunday, quote, "The real radicals in the Democratic Party are the so-called centrists who don't support Medicare for all, higher taxes on the rich, free tuition, legalizing marijuana, and the Green New Deal. They are completely out of touch with the electorate."
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The centrists are the true radicals. I want everyone to meet Rutger Bregman. I just learned about this guy in the last week, and I can't even tell you. He's an economist. I can't even tell you how impressed I am by this guy.
You know, I must say, from a European perspective, this whole debate in America about capitalism versus socialism, it seems rather ridiculous, to be honest. I mean, what we're talking about are policies that are supported by the vast majority of Americans and work really, really well in the countries that tried them and are actually investments that save money in the long run, right? So take a look at healthcare. America has the most expensive healthcare system in the world. Life expectancy is going down. So in the long run, you'll save money with Medicare for all. It shouldn't be a left versus right thing or a progressive versus conservative thing. It's just common sense.
I hear this a lot from folks that live, especially in European countries. They go, I just have to laugh at the stupid ass debate that is happening in your country. Is this real? Is this really what you guys think? This is really what you're talking? Are you effing insane? Yeah, we look crazy. We look a lot crazy to the rest of the world because they see us, you know, listening to these guys and deciding to shoot ourselves in the foot. And then once we realize that we've shot ourselves in the foot, well, the way we respond is by shooting ourselves in the other foot. And Rutger Bregman had a fabulous take on this at the Davos meeting. You know, all the financial people get together from all the masses of the universe get together. He had a fantastic take on this. He didn't get a lot of recognition, but when he was at Davos. But this guy's definitely on my radar right now.
Now I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water. Ten years ago, the World Economic Forum asked the question, what must industry do to prevent a broad social backlash? The answer is very simple. Just stop talking about philanthropy and start talking about taxes. We got to be talking about taxes. Yikes. That's it. Taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is in my opinion.
So what is philanthropy? Philanthropy is when we do this thing where we say, give all the money to the super wealthy, and then they will give it back to us in the form of higher wages and other investments and the things that they decide to build with that money. No. Taxes, taxes, taxes. That's what we should be charging these pricks. Taxes. Because they've taken so freaking much from society. I was talking earlier about how the wealthy simply believe, and they've gotten a lot of help from regular people that continue to vote for either conservative politicians or corporatist politicians that help them out. The wealthy believe that they get to operate by a whole separate set of rules, that they are not like you and me. And the fact that they got a massive tax cut last year illustrates that. The other thing that illustrates that is what came out this week about Operation Varsity Blues.
Based on the charges unsealed today, all of them knowingly conspired with Singer and others to help their children either cheat on the SAT or ACT and or buy their children's admission to elite schools through fraud. Singer's clients paid him anywhere between $100,000 and $6.5 million for this service, though the majority paid between $250,000 and $400,000 per student. This case is about the widening corruption of elite college admissions through the steady application of wealth combined with fraud. There can be no separate college admissions system for the wealthy, and I'll add that there will not be a separate criminal justice system either.
It's not enough that they own all of the politicians. It's not enough that they get all of the tax breaks. It's not enough that they get the yachts and the mansions, that they get to live behind gates and guards. It's not enough. For those of you that were told that the way you make it in this world is you apply yourself, you work hard, you study, sweaty your brow, up by the bootstraps, we learned that the folks, the very wealthy folks that have been feeding us that tripe, even they don't believe it. Because they have decided that it's up to them, because they have the money that they have taken from you, the money that has been legislated to them by politicians that you voted for. They've decided that it's okay to dirty the air. It's okay to dirty the water. It's okay to pay for their dumb kid to get into college while your kid is unable to get in because your kid is far more bright but not wealthy. And if it weren't enough, Donald Dum Dum hit us with this one this week. The headline over at Politico: Trump proposes to end student loan forgiveness program. It's not enough that they just get to buy their way into college. He would now like to just completely get rid of this program. He recently introduced his budget, and it calls for $1.5 trillion of cuts to programs that you and I use. Programs that, as a candidate, he promised he wasn't going to cut. And now he's given himself $1.5 trillion tax cut. Well, got to pay for it. Where's that going to come from? Ah, we're going to take $1.5 trillion, exactly the money they just took from the Treasury and stuffed in their own pockets. They're going to take that out of the programs that you need. My state, Washington State, recently passed a bill that presidential candidates, to get on our ballot anyway, have to release their tax returns. Now, by the way, Trump is never going to win Washington State, but I really, really hope that other states decide to take up this issue. Hey, no tax returns, then you don't get to be on our state's ballot. Doesn't matter how rich you are, you have to live by our rules.
Every year, hundreds of thousands of hardworking, talented students strive for admission to elite schools. As every parent knows, these students work harder and harder every year in a system that appears to grow more and more competitive every year. And that system is a zero-sum game. For every student admitted through fraud, an honest, genuinely talented student was rejected. The parents charged today, despite already being able to give their children every legitimate advantage in the college admissions game, instead chose to corrupt and illegally manipulate the system for their benefit. We're not talking about donating a building so that a school's more likely to take your son or daughter. We're talking about deception and fraud, fake test scores, fake athletic credentials, fake photographs, bribed college officials.
Nothing is new under the sun, as the old saying goes. And I talked about earlier how this socialism thing that the Republicans are pushing. By the way, they're the only ones pushing for socialism. There are no Democratic candidates pushing for socialism. It is their 90-year history of screaming about socialism that has even kept the word in our lexicon. The fact that they talk so much about socialism. If you love it so much, GOP, perhaps you should marry it. But nothing is new. And Harry Truman pointed this out. I'm going to play this fabulous clip for you right now. Harry Truman pointed this out because the Republican Party of today is exactly, and I'm not kidding about this, exactly the same as it was during Harry Truman's day.
Been studying the Republican Party for over 12 years at close hand in the capital of the United States. And by this time, I have discovered where the Republicans stand on most of the major issues. Since they won't tell you themselves, I'm going to tell you. They approve the American farmer, but they're willing to help him go broke. They stand four square for the American home, but not for housing. They are strong for labor, but they are stronger for restricting labor's rights. They favor a minimum wage. The smaller the minimum, the better. They endorse educational opportunity for all, but they won't spend money for teachers or for schools. They think modern medical care and hospitals are fine for people who can afford them. They approve of Social Security benefits, so much so that they took them away from almost a million people.
None of it is new, and as admirable as it is, Democrats, they just want someone that you can make sure can defeat Donald Trump. Let's do this. Let's just make sure that no matter who the nominee ends up being, that we all come together.
Any single Democrat running today, and I may not be able to enumerate every single one of them right now, would be far better than the current occupants of the White House. So let's keep this in mind. And we can conduct ourselves in this way every single day for the next 11 months until voting begins here in Iowa. Let's remember that each one of us at the end of this, once we have a nominee, will be on the same team. It doesn't matter whose team you are on today. It doesn't matter which prospective nominee that you back right now. Ultimately, we all have to get on board the same person because it is fundamental to our chances of success that we defeat Donald Trump in 2020.
I know it's too damn early to talk about 2020. But because of our moneyed system, this is how it goes now. If you hate the fact that we start talking about an election 20 months before the damn thing takes place, then stay involved. Pick a progressive candidate. Help pass HR1. Get the money out of our politics. And eventually we'll have a nice, normal democracy, one that can't be bought and one that doesn't have 20-month presidential elections. But you gotta stay with me. You gotta stay woke.
Yes or no, are we still putting children in cages?
To my knowledge, CBP never purposely put a child in a cage if you mean a cage like this.
Now, I've seen the cages. I just want you to admit that the cages exist.
Sir, they're not cages.
What are they?
Areas of the border facility that are carved out for the safety and protection of those who remain there while they're being processed. If we have two gangs, we separate them into separate areas of that facility.
Madam Secretary,
we separate that from another son.
We're not going to go through the semantics. Now, I saw the cyclone fences that were made as cages. And you did too. All you have to do is admit it. If it's a bad policy, then change it. But don't mislead the committee. Do not mislead the committee.
So the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Kirstjen Nielsen, is pure evil. And that's not hyperbole. The fact that that kind of semantic BS, is how, they're not cages. They're not freaking cages. Children. So when it comes to children, people that hurt children, hit children, yell at children, put children in cages, it makes no sense to me at all. And I understand how frustrating it can be to raise children, and the fact that adults and children clearly speak two different languages. But children can learn. Children can be taught. And the way that those children turn out is going to be largely based on how you raise them. And if we beat them and we yell at them and we put them in cages and we tell them that fear is the heart of love and all these other things, that's your future. And that's who's going to inherit the future. And they're just going to pass on that kind of hate, pass on that kind of abuse. What happened at the border with the kids is just like with Sandy Hook. It's one of those things that I'm just never, ever going to get over. It hurts too much. And you would think that all of the pro-life people and the conservative movement, the ones who are screaming about protecting the children, you would think that they would want to be a part of this with respect to protecting children. But instead, what you find is really quite the opposite. They're defending this kind of behavior. And when you live in a deeply conservative religious society, you tend to end up with things like this. So the headline here, file this. This is from the Daily Beast. File this one under soul crushing. An 11-year-old rape victim begged for an abortion. She was forced to give birth instead. But Melvin, they're just protecting the children. Quoting here, an 11-year-old Argentinian girl raped by her grandmother's partner pleaded with her hospital 8 separate times for an abortion. This according to advocates. On Tuesday, at 23 weeks pregnant, she gave birth via C-section to a 1.3-pound baby after being denied an abortion for more than a month. Children. You say, well, Melvin, we don't do that kind of thing here. Actually, those are exactly the kind of laws that we're trying to implement. Laws that weaken what we consider rape. This is true. Laws that consider what we consider rape are getting weaker. How is that? So over in Idaho, oh God, Idaho, State House Republicans killed a bill that would have created a minimum marriage age in Idaho. And the minimum age would have been 16 years old, okay? Just 16. I think it should be 18, but fine, 16. But they said, no, that can't happen because that's the heavy hand of government. That's the state getting involved in marriage. Actually, we do these kinds of things to protect children. And the Democrat that brought up the bill that got just shut down by the Republicans, she said, I at least want to bring our state statutory laws in compliance with the marriage law. And the Republicans said no. And there's a thing, child marriage in America. And it's not older women marrying young boys. It's way older men marrying young girls, 11, 12, 13 years old. And when I say that we're weakening rape laws, well, if they're married, it's a lot harder to make the argument that what happened was rape. And if you're unable to even pass a simple common sense law like this that protects children. And it says that 40 and 50 year old effing pervs should not be having sex with children or marrying children. We can't even get something like this passed in a country that swears it loves children so much. If we can't get something like this passed, then what are we doing?
How many children 17 years old or younger have died in DHS, ICE, or CBP custody since you took office?
I will get back to you on that figure. What I can tell you is that we have saved 4,200 migrants who were at distress.
Approximately how many have died?
I understand your question, sir. I will get back to you.
She doesn't know. She does not know how many have died in custody. And it's not really all that important to her. She doesn't really care. How do we get to this point? You know, our smallest, most vulnerable people in our society. This is just willing, this is the price that we're simply just willing to pay after so many decades. I see him in front of Planned Parenthood. You know, I hear him barking into microphones in churches. Protect the children. Protect the children. But now that we've got conservative rule, we've decided that that's really not all that great of an idea. Yeah, as a matter of fact, all these dead kids, man, that's kind of a, hey, that's just our policy now. A couple dead kids, pff, F it. That's just the way it goes. Hey, shouldn't have come here. Oh, you're seeking asylum. And now your kid is dead. Hey, shouldn't have come here. Idaho. I hate Idaho. Just going to say it right. Hate Idaho. I used to live in Spokane, right next door to Idaho. And I don't mind if you're conservative, but when you're conservative to the point of being effing gross and hurting children, and you can't even agree on basic common sense principles, you're not conservative. You're freaking evil. The headline, Idaho House passes, they couldn't pass the bill protecting children from being married off to men that are 3, 4, 10 times their age. But they did pass this bill that parents now have to opt into sex education. It's not automatic anymore. What's happening with your body? Yo, it's best if you just find out on your own when you and Billy go behind the barn there. You get pregnant at 12 or whatever. Just go, figure it out. Opt in. And they say, well, it's not for us to teach this stuff to children. Actually, it is. It's what we do as a society. We teach our children. No. Parents should be able to opt in for this. That way their children can remain ignorant and our teen pregnancy rate can go through the roof. That's not an official statement, but my Lord, it might as well be, because that's what's going to happen. I remember getting a very competent sex ed when I was in middle school in San Diego, California. And it was one of those things that helped me abstain. I did not watch the presentation and go, hell yeah, I should go do that. Not that I had options. I should go get me some babies and some diseases. I figured I would have an, oh, good night. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to take that a little more seriously now. Television didn't really show it in that kind of light. It just seemed like this fancy free thing. But after learning about it, like the biology and the science and the history, you know, the statistics, I go, oh, hey, once I got sex ed, I said, well, not going to do that for a while. But they said, no. When we teach them this stuff, we're giving them a license to go do that stuff. Actually, I'd argue the opposite. Everyone, and I mean everyone, is always better with education.
As you sit here today, you do not know how many human beings have died while in the custody of the department that you lead. And you, in preparation for today's hearing, you didn't ascertain that number, but you don't know it today?
I don't have an exact figure for you.
Do you have a rough idea?
Sir, what I can tell you
I'm
is...
I'm talking about people who have died in your custody. You don't have the number?
I will get back to you with the number.
Okay.
Or we can simply go on not caring about children, you know, as we've decided that our new policy is here in America. I mention this almost every week on this show, this story about the dead and abused children. And what you reap, you will sow. And what we're doing with these children, this is going to come back to us times 10, because this is what we've decided to do with our future. And I know I talk a lot about this issue on this show, but you have no idea how much this stuff hurts. And the fact that there's not even a real conversation happening around this right now kills me even more. It's not just a slogan. Children really are the future. And you do not have to have children in order to protect children. You can be childless and still be an advocate for children. And I think that everybody, because you were a child once, I don't care who you are if you're listening to this, you were a child once, or you're a child now. Think about that. And you should try to be the person that you needed when you were a child. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. You can listen on the go through the Podbean app. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TFYCPO. Questions, comments, hate mail, just send it to me. TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform, but also to entertain. And I want to thank you for listening to the show. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woke you up, stay woke, and good morning.